Congress's largest Republican freshman class in 70 years will be sworn in on Wednesday and will quickly establish new rules. They'll start by reading the Constitution out loud, then try to repeal President Obama's health care reform, and draw a line in the sand over raising the debt ceiling with the threat of a government shutdown like the one in 1995. Let's start today with one of the incoming GOP freshmen. Steve Womack is the outgoing mayor of Rogers, Arkansas. He's one of seven new Republican congressmen that Democrats have labeled the shutdown caucus. In his campaign, he raised buckets of money, which he shared with fellow Republicans across the country. And in turn, he's been named to the powerful House Appropriations Committee, which makes spending decisions quite an honor for a freshman. Congressman-elect Womack, welcome.
Robin, how are you?
I'm just fine. And you have said you are open to the idea of a government shutdown.
I'm open to the idea of about anything. These are unprecedented times for our nation. The message that I received as I campaigned was we spend too much money, money we don't have for things we don't need, and we have a spending problem. And that's precisely what I think my charge is as we go to Washington, and that is to right the ship, so to speak, to turn this thing around.
So you are willing to shut the government down?
Well, I think it's a little bit premature. Look, my initial response, my default setting is, it's never a good thing to shut the government down. We're going to have a major vote take place in the early part of 2011 about raising the debt limit. What I would look for in the negotiations is whether or not there are some guarantees that can be made, reference to spending, reference to returning us to some, perhaps to the 08 levels, and taking some very serious steps on the spending side of the equation to ensure that we don't have to revisit this issue.
What has to be cut in your mind? The military, Social Security, Medicare? For some, that's in the locked box. Do I hear you saying no, that everything, including the military, Social Security, Medicare, needs to be
looked at? Well, I just think that at the end of the day, I don't think there's any question what every one of us as Americans are going to have to endure some kind of sacrifice in order for this country to get back on a solid economic footing. To be specific about what programs, what agencies, I think is very premature at this point. Now, if we're able to come up with the right compromise, then I think I'm open to a vote to raise the debt ceiling. And with a Republican majority in the House, I think we speak with a pretty loud voice. And the other side is going to have to pay attention to what our demands are. And I know it sounds good to say, well, if we can't get certain things, we just shut the government down. Well, that's really not, I think, the course of action that needs to take place. But if there are no other available options, if that's where the other side of the aisle is going to point us, then certainly I'd be open to that. I think it would be a short-lived situation because our government and a lot of people out here who are dependent on that Social Security check and what have you just cannot afford to go indefinitely without those government entitlements.
Well, that's what Mike Huckabee is warning. He's asking his fellow Republicans, are you willing to see your parents not get their Social Security check? Are you willing to see doctors not get paid for Medicare treatments or military families not get their pay? The last time Republicans did the shutdown in 95, as we mentioned, the momentum of the then Republican revolution led by Newt Gingrich was stalled, and it may have contributed to Bill Clinton's reelection.
Well, you know, I really don't base solutions that I believe are fundamental to America's economic prosperity based on what happened in another era. I look at my job, I want to do what's right for America. I'm an American first. I'm not a Republican first. I'm an American first. Part of the problem that America suffers from right now, we have become so partisan, there's just simply not very much, boy, I hate to use the word compromise, but there's not a lot of give and take on the part of the parties. And so under the threat of a government shutdown, I think Democrats and people that have a little bit more of a liberal viewpoint about how we climb out of this economic mess should be more than willing to meet us a little bit closer to the center on issues that I think could help us avoid the pitfalls of a government shutdown.
You say how much this partisan politics is offending you, but you seem to have towed the party line on earmarks. You originally supported earmarks. Now you support the GOP's ban on them.
Well, earmarks have gotten us into partly responsible for the pickle that we're in right now. Look, I've said before that I think there are certain earmarks out there that have been good and healthy for America, but the overall process has lost its transparency and it's been abused, and I voted with the majority in our conference to ban earmarks in 112th Congress. And look, I as a mayor, I have benefited from some earmark legislation that has provided some very important stimulus funds into transportation infrastructure in the greater Northwest Arkansas area.
Well, but I guess that's the point. The Arkansas Highway Department says going forward, 53 highway projects will be paid for by earmarks in your state. That's jobs and infrastructure. Even your fellow Republican John Bozeman, he's now senator-elect. You will occupy his old House seat. Bozeman says he wants reform, not an outright ban. He gives examples like the Ozark Dam earmark and says everyone agrees that was a worthwhile project. So he's very uneasy about the ban you voted for.
There are differences of opinion on the best way out of the mess, and I've just simply said that I would like to see a way that we can still fund some of these very important projects that create jobs, but without having to accept that type of process and all of the problems that are associated with it that lead to abuse. And so I think this is a step in the right direction. I voted accordingly.
Meanwhile, we should make a nod to your term in the city of Rogers, mayor there for 12 years. It's now ranked as one of the nation's best places to live, 2010. You balanced the budget without raising taxes, turned the city into a shopping destination. You've pointed out it didn't hurt that Walmart corporate headquarters were, you know, right next door in the neighboring town. Police in Rogers were sued for racial profiling. Overall, though, a success story in Rogers. What do you bring from that experience to Washington?
I think Rogers is a model for how Washington ought to operate. We saw some opportunities to create retail destination opportunities, and we pursued those. We invested in infrastructure that created a climate for economic growth and prosperity in our city. So now 12 years down the road, we're pretty healthy. We got a strong balance sheet.
And as you noted, you did it in part with the help of some federal dollars.
Well, there's been a few federal dollars. It hasn't been a lot. And look, I'm a very fiscal conservative sort of guy, but we've been able to parlay some funds for the Perry Road Interchange, which is a major connection piece out on our interstate, and then the I-49 corridor, Interstate 540, which will become 49. But for the most part, I would say 90-95% of the money that's been plowed into the development of the greater city of Rogers has been out of Hyde. It's been out of the local populace here because we recognize in this very conservative district that if it's going to happen, then it's up to us.
That's Steve Womack, as we've been hearing, mayor of Rogers, Arkansas. But on Wednesday, he'll be sworn in as congressman from the 3rd District in Arkansas. He'll take a seat on the powerful House Appropriations Committee. Congressman, can I call you Congressman Womack?
Well, it's still a little early. we can do that on Wednesday.
Steve, best of luck to you.
My pleasure.
And let's bring in Gail Shattuck now. She covers Congress for the Christian Science Monitor. Gail, first of all, Happy New Year.
Back at you. Happy New Year.
But it sounds like it's going to be a contentious one. So your thoughts first. We just heard from a mayor who used federal dollars. He says not that much, but, you know, perhaps those roads he mentioned made it possible for people to come to his town to shop and boost his town. And Steve Womack now says he wants the Democrats to make big cuts. And who knows, maybe cut out someone else's off-ramp in some other town down the road. And he says if the Democrats don't make those cuts, he will be open to a government shutdown. Your thoughts?
It's fascinating to hear this freshman class because they sound a little bit like, you know, in the run-up to World War I, all the talk of a splendid little war. You know, they really are enthusiastic about going at this issue of spending and hitting it head-on. But when people hear him say things like, it's never a good thing to shut government down, you know, that kind of sends shudders through official Washington because not only is it not a good thing, it's often a disastrous thing. You know, reference Greece, which is why you've got people like Mike Huckabee saying to his colleagues, don't be so enthusiastic about shutting down government. People really are going to get hurt by this. But I think what you're really seeing is a very aggressive game of chicken in advance. Republicans think that they have something this time round that they didn't back when Newt Gingrich faced off with Bill Clinton, and that's Fox News. They think that they have a capacity to get their message out and a strong movement at their back that will let the Democrats and the president be blamed for a shutdown, not them.
Well, here's a response from the White House. White House Economic Advisor Austin Goolsbee was on ABC's This Week yesterday. We know at the heart of the matter is whether or not the Congress will vote to raise the debt ceiling. In other words, sort of extend the country's credit card, if you will. And he says the country can't afford not to raise the debt ceiling.
the impact on the economy would be catastrophic. I mean, that would be a worse financial and economic crisis than anything we saw in 2008.
And Gail Chadwick, why? What's the Democrats' argument?
Well, if you aren't able to go forward with the debt limit, you shut down government in another way. I think there's a real misunderstanding here on part of some of the freshman Republicans. They think that you can stay within the debt limit if you just cut back on discretionary spending. But that's not the big part. You know, if interest rates go up the tiniest bit, the interest owed on the national debt goes up dramatically. And it's that figure, I think, that has Democrats, among others, very concerned. There are all sorts of things that could tip us over that debt limit, not just spending.
Well, incoming chair of the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee, Daryl Issa, said yesterday he's going to try to identify about $200 billion in wasteful spending. That'll be his main focus. He mentioned, for example, a $500 million NASA rocket program that he would cut. He'd find $125 billion in Medicare fraud. But as you said, it's maybe the interest rate on the debt that is the scariest thing. And in addition, the entitlements such as Medicare, Social Security make up 60% of the budget. Military is another huge chunk. You mentioned a game of chicken. Are there Democrats who are going to dare Republicans to make those bigger cuts?
I think you're actually already seeing elements of that, but they're going at this without the support on the Democratic side they might have had in the past. Look at those Blue Dog Democrats. Their ranks were cut in half. Those are the fiscally conservative Democrats, often their place taken by Tea Party Republicans. So it's really set up with a much more liberal Democratic Party and a much more conservative Republican Party. It's a formula for gridlock in that sense. I think the one thing that is different is that Democrats, too, have pressure to cut the budget. The president is in a race between now and his State of the Union address to come up with spending cuts as well. The question is where, when, and how.
Well, Tea Partiers are also saying that not legislation that counts for them, it's regulation. They think that the Obama administration is actually going to regulate as opposed to legislate.
Well, this is a Congress that's set up for that. The committees are already focused in on it. The Energy Committee, for example, wants to go after the Environmental Protection Agency, which is trying to do by regulation what Congress refused to do by law, which is restrict greenhouse gases. And you're going to see that across the board. The president and his departments trying to move through regulation what they couldn't get done through legislation, and Republicans mounting a very powerful resistance to it.
We're talking with Gail Chadwick of the Christian Science Monitor about the upcoming congressional session. And Gail, what's the Tea Party's role here? Because they're angry at Republicans because of legislation passed during the lame duck session. They were against the measure to cover the cost of care for 9/11 rescue workers, against the START Treaty with Russia, the Food Safety Act. So what's the mood of Tea Partiers going into this session?
Well, you know, even the ones that weren't officially Tea Party backed are looking to the next election when that sentiment out there, forget the label Tea Party for a minute, the public mood out there is going to be very, very concerned about government spending and debt. When you see some of the cuts actually kick in the next 2 years, you could see strong protest movements in cities over the nature of those cuts. So this is not a Congress that can quietly do its work.
Well, and Tea Party activists got a lot of what they wanted in the new session. In addition to reading the Constitution out loud, Republicans in the House say that they're going to pass legislation to require that every bill make clear how it's allowed by the Constitution, under the Constitution. And in addition, it's going to have to make clear how it's paid for. These were things the Tea Party activists wanted.
That's true. It's interesting, though, when you look at the difference between how Democrats went after fiscal responsibility. They called it pay as you go. The Republicans are calling it cut as you go. All tax cuts are good. It's the spending you have to find cuts for.
Well, and that thinking also applies to the first big move that's going to happen in the House. Republicans say they're going to repeal health care reform. That move on their part has also been exempted from the requirement that every bill recite how it's going to be paid for, because, as we know, the Independent Congressional Budget Office says that health care reform will actually save money down the road. And so Republicans have said that, you know, their move to repeal it does not have to make up for the savings that healthcare was supposed to provide. But what do you think of this idea, this big, bold move to repeal healthcare reform right out of the gate when the Senate is probably going to overturn whatever happens in the House and the president can veto it?
It's a dramatic political gesture, but I think it sets a marker, and that's what Republicans are interested in. They want people to stand up and have to take these votes. And interestingly enough, the Democrats are welcoming this. They feel that a full-out debate on health care, where you actually get into the minutiae, is it a good or a bad thing? They welcome that debate. They think once people know what's actually in the bill, they will support it. Republicans think just the opposite. We're going to see something we haven't seen in years in Congress, which is actual debates with amendments, with members' time spent on the floor talking about policy issues. It's been a long time.
Well, and what other issues are we expected to hear about as Republicans take these powerful committee chairmanships?
Well, it's not, as you say, big legislative priorities. It's things like oversight. You're going to see Republican panels immediately get into very extensive oversight. Daryl Issa, who's chairing the government oversight panel, has got a long list of hearings, initially focusing on fraud and abuse, but moving into actually all aspects, including foreign policy.
Well, and Daryl Issa, again, the incoming chair of the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee, has had to backtrack on his accusation that President Obama is corrupt. Here's what he said as a follow-up on CNN yesterday.
In saying that this is one of the most corrupt administrations, which is what I meant to say there, when you hand out $1 trillion in TARP just before this president came in, most of it unspent, $1 trillion nearly in stimulus that this president asked for, plus this huge expansion in health care and government, it has a corrupting effect.
Putting aside the fact that he's blaming Obama for the TARP money, which, as he just said, came from the Bush administration, what case is he trying to make?
You're seeing a shift here between a firebrand to statesman. He constantly emphasizes the point that he is not out to impeach the president. He's not following the line Mitch McConnell said that the priority is to not have Obama reelected. None of that. He's saying we have common interests. I can find, he said, $200 billion. And there are lots of Democrats that are interested in helping me find it, too, if it genuinely is waste. And that's where the floor debate becomes interesting.
Well, how will that shift? And maybe a shift that we heard earlier from Congressman-elect Steve Womack saying, well, maybe I won't be for a government shutdown, but maybe I will. How will these kinds of shifts as these firebrands actually get into office affect their backers, the Tea Party activists?
Well, the Tea Party activists are looking for results. I mean, at the end of the day, this is a cycle where there are a few numbers that count. Unemployment counts and the deficit counts. You change them or you don't. And I think the Republican fate for this Congress rises or falls on those two numbers.
Gail Chadwick, reporting on Congress for the Christian Science Monitor and us. Gail, thank you.
You're welcome.